Thank you. Be seated. In the call to Foremost Paving Inc. et al. Versus Rosario Lopez et al. Court is allotted 15 minutes for each side to present arguments, and we are now ready to hear arguments from petitioners.
Hey, please, the court, and the Andy Allison will present arguments from petitioners, and Allison will reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Cindy Allison, and I represent the petitioners Foremost Paving and Motherall in this appeal. Foremost Paving and Motherall were the defendants in the trial below. As you're all aware, this is the second time this case has been appealed. It was a PI case that has now been tried twice, each time resulting in a favorable jury verdict for the defendants. The plaintiffs initiated this appeal to the San Antonio Court of Appeals, complaining that certain trial exhibits were not produced 30 days prior to trial. The San Antonio court reversed a unanimous jury verdict by holding that a videotape and three trial exhibits were erroneously admitted in violation of Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 166B6 and 215.5. They also found that such admission was harmful error. The San Antonio court opinion directly conflicts with this court's opinions in previous cases and other courts of appeals because the record in this case overwhelmingly establishes that, one, the complained of exhibits were not controlling on an issue dispositive of the case, two, the exhibits were merely cumulative of other admissible evidence, and three, there was sufficient good cause shown to require the admission of the exhibits. So San Antonio, if this court finds that the admission of the exhibits was harmless error, then they need not address the issue of whether or not good cause was actually shown. So for the first part of my argument, I'm going to address why these exhibits were harmless error. The proper standard of review when determining whether or not something is harmful error is Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 181B. 81B provides that no judgment will be reversed on appeal unless the error complained of was reasonably calculated to and probably did cause the rendition of an improper verdict. When this court has interpreted 81B in cases similar to the one before this court, it has held that erroneous rulings on the admissibility of evidence is not reversible error where the evidence is cumulative or not controlling on a material issue dispositive of the case. In order to make such a determination, this court must review the entire record. The San Antonio Court of Appeals did not review the entire record, and it is obvious from their opinion. Therefore, they applied the incorrect standard in determining whether or not there was harmful error. This case began in 1979 when the plaintiffs were the passengers in a pickup truck that was being driven by a man named Sloan Lopez. Mr. Lopez was operating a motor vehicle even though he had been playing cards all night and had not slept for approximately 24 hours. The plaintiffs were all injured when the pickup truck that they were in crossed the center line, went into the oncoming lane of traffic, and hit head-on a semi-tractor trailer rig. There was fog in the area that day. The plaintiffs sued Foremost and Motherall because they had recently paved the highway and had put down temporary striping. The plaintiffs alleged that Foremost and Motherall were negligent because the temporary striping was inadequate in light of the fog. The defendants brought the state of Texas in as a cross defendant. The three main defenses that Foremost and Motherall alleged at trial were, one, that this temporary striping was adequate. Two, that even if it was not adequate, that it was the state's responsibility to ensure that the striping was adequate because they were merely complying with their contract where the state had specified the type and the pattern of the temporary striping. Their third defensive theory was even if the striping was inadequate, the inadequate temporary striping did not cause the accident. The cause of the accident was Simone Lopez either falling asleep at the wheel or not paying attention. The jury made several findings in this case. none of which the Court of Appeals, in their opinion, addressed in the determination of whether or not the evidence was harmful.
Counsel, I'm concerned about the videotape.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it your contention that the videotape evidence was cumulative?
It is my opinion that it was cumulative and that it was not relevant to any issue dispositive of the case.
Well, did the videotape show markings on the...
Yes, they showed the temporary markings, and the videotape was two toy trucks. It showed Mr. Lopez's truck that was a toy truck going across the center line and hitting the tractor trailer toy truck.
But it didn't show whether or not the markings were obscured. It couldn't show that, could it? Because it didn't show the fog, did it?
It didn't show the fog. It did not. But this really doesn't matter because the jury in this case
but
found...
But it couldn't be a fair representation of the scene of the accident.
The plaintiff...
And if it is supposed to be a videotape picture, reconstruction of the scene of the accident, but it doesn't include all the elements that would compose a proper picture.
The only objection the plaintiffs made about the videotape was that it was not produced. They did not make any objection that it was dissimilar. In fact, their own expert did not even attempt to rebut this videotape. And additionally, it really does not matter because the jury found the striping was inadequate even though they looked at this videotape. So the striping, the depiction of the striping in the videotape was not relevant to the jury's findings because the jury found that the striping was inadequate, but that it was the state's responsibility and not the contractor's.
Wasn't the purpose of the videotape, and it was offered as rebuttal evidence, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Wasn't the purpose of it to show the angle of approach of the
right.
vehicles?
Yes, Your Honor.
As opposed to anything really to do with the striping?
That's correct. In this case, the videotape just is a comparison and a contrast of the different angles of impact. Martinez, the plaintiff's expert, testified that the accident occurred at a zero-degree angle of impact, indicating that there was no drift, therefore Sloan Lopez had not fallen asleep. Our expert said it happened at a one-degree angle of impact, indicating a drift, therefore he was asleep. It was not admitted to show the adequacy of the temporary striping, had nothing to do with the adequacy of the temporary striping, or the defendant's contractual obligations with the state as far as providing, whether or not they were responsible for providing the adequate temporary striping. You know, as I was saying, the jury found that the striping was inadequate, even though all of these exhibits that are complained of today, the videotape and three exhibits that I attached to my brief, as you can see, all had to do with the angle of impact, which was relevant to whether or not Sloan Lopez fell asleep. The jury never answered those issues. First of all, because they never found liability. Even though they found, they found Foremost and Motherall were not negligent and that they didn't, that they did not fail to provide all safety measures, et cetera, et cetera. But they found that the state had created and maintained a dangerous condition regarding the temporary striping. They didn't find the state liable, however, because they found that the state had no prior knowledge of the dangerous condition, all of which, and I've cited in my brief, is supported by the overwhelming testimony in this case. All of the complained of exhibits, as I stated before, had to do with the angles of impact and whether or not Sloan Lopez caused the accident. Sloan Lopez's negligence was never submitted to the jury because he was not a plaintiff in the case, and the jury never answered the causation issues. Thus, all of the complained of exhibits were not relevant to the questions that the jury answered. Therefore, it's harmless error because they were not controlling on any issue dispositive of the case. Additionally, the complained of exhibits were cumulative. The San Antonio court held that the exhibits were not cumulative the poster board exhibits were not cumulative because they were engineering drawings. And if you look at the exhibits complained of in the brief, and the only ones relevant to this appeal are DX DX 59, 60, and 61. DX 58 and 62 were found to be harmless by the San Antonio Court of Appeals, and the plaintiff has not challenged that holding. Therefore, those two exhibits are not relevant on this appeal. The three exhibits that the Court of Appeals held were not cumulative because they were engineering drawings. The expert testified that he could destroy them or disregard them and redraw them on a blank board. And also, they merely just illustrated all the other verbal testimony in the case, and there was plenty of other evidence to substantiate that Salome Lopez had, in fact, fallen asleep, which is what these exhibits were relevant to. My time is up, so unless there's any questions, I'd like to save the remainder for rebuttal.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
May I please report, Mr. Timothy Patton, to present argument for respondent.
May it please the Court, my name is Tim Patton. I represent the respondents, Rosario Lopez, and two of her children. I would like to address two issues today, good cause and harmful error. In terms of the history of this case, it's undisputed that more than 4 months prior to the second trial, the plaintiffs, we served a production request on both defendants, asking them to produce all tangible things, all exhibits, which their experts had prepared or which they would use at trial.
It is your contention, I suppose, at the outset, that the rule requires production of purely demonstrative exhibits to be used at trial.
Yes, Your Honor, I think you.
And so if, for example, a party in a case makes the request that that was made in this case, and there's no response to it 30 days before trial, then the party to whom it is made could not make a chalkboard drawing or a graph or write some numbers on a sheet of paper for the jury, or in any other way produce a tangible illustration of the evidence in the case for the jury.
I think if there are exhibits in existence and you've asked for those exhibits, and they do not provide them, the rule requires you to provide them. I think that's different than creating something at trial that has never been created before.
Why is it different?
Because for one thing, a professionally prepared exhibit is much more probative, has much greater impact than something simply drawn on a chalkboard. Your experts can look at it, you can develop cross-examination and things of that nature.
So if you can get a video prepared a week before trial, you ought to do so you don't have to produce it for the other side.
Under their interpretation, I think that's probably true.
Under your interpretation?
If you have the information to prepare that video years before the trial, which they did in this instance, I don't think you can lay behind the log and prepare it at the last minute.
So every party in every case had better prepare their demonstrative exhibits more than 30 days before trial if they're asked for by the other side. Otherwise, they may not get to use them.
I think that's probably true, Your Honor.
That's charts, graphs, summaries of testimony, videos, days in the life, whatever.
To the extent it's admissible evidence and not something that just merely that does not go back in the jury room, I do think if it's asked for, if there's no objection, I think they have to provide them. If there's an objection, like, for example, when you ask for the names of witnesses, it's not discoverable, no objection, you have to produce a witness list.
Counsel, I'm concerned about this particular case. Now, as I recall, this exhibit, the video in particular, was prepared in response to a new theory that had been injected into the trial by the plaintiffs. The video was not prepared more than 30 days prior to trial. It was in fact prepared. The expert who prepared it had been designated, but this video was not prepared except in rebuttal once the plaintiff had injected its new theory into the trial. Rebuttal to its new theory. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. That's their argument. The record does not support that. The new theory allegedly injected was that Salome Lopez was asleep at the time, was awake at the time of the accident. The expert who prepared this exhibit, Mr. Nally, testified at the first trial that Mr. Lopez was asleep at the time of the accident. He testified at the second trial in the same manner.
The plaintiff's witness got on the stand and argued this zero angle of impact. This exhibit was prepared during the trial to rebut that and show that there was a 1 degree angle of impact. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if that's exactly what they're saying.
That's my understanding of what the witness
raised. It's my understanding that it's essentially what was raised at the first trial, though we did not have an expert on the angle of impact. And one of the contested issues at the first trial, as addressed in this court's opinion in 1983, was whether Mr. Lopez was awake or asleep at the time of the accident. More importantly, is they never claimed surprise in the trial court. They took the precisely opposite approach. What they said was, well, Judge, we can admit this evidence because it's simply a reaffirmation, it's a reiteration of what Mr. Nally said in 1983. An attorney for the state claimed surprised, but these attorneys said, well, it's no big deal, this is what he said in 1983. More importantly,
did this evidence relate to an issue that was dispositive of the case at trial?
I think so, Your Honor.
Tell us how.
Mr. Nally testified on both liability and causation. His testimony was crucial on both those issues, and the exhibits were relevant to both those issues. Their theory that they have basically alternative defenses, where their first line of defense was that the striping was adequate. The second line of defense was, well, if it wasn't inadequate, it was the state's responsibility. That's never been raised in the appellate court. It wasn't raised in the Court of Appeals. It's not in their main brief. It's not in their post-submission brief, and it's certainly not in their motion for rehearing. Their defensive theory was a single theory. It was the striping was adequate. And to support that theory, they put on Mr. Nally and his exhibits and evidence that the state had approved and used this for years.
The striping was inadequate, right?
I think they did.
The jury found for you on that issue.
I agree, Your Honor.
But it was not dispositive.
No, I don't think so, because it's not so easy to segregate the liability, causation, inadequate striping issues.
This evidence directly addressed the question of whether or not Mr. Lopez was asleep. Those issues were never submitted to the jury and were not dispositive. Is that correct?
Well, I think I disagree, Your Honor, because
well, that's what I'm asking, Kelly.
Because causation was so intertwined with liability, I don't think you can segregate them. I mean, their liability defense was it couldn't have been our striping; it had to be what Mr. Lopez did. So it's not one of those situations where you can precisely delineate between liability and causation.
Well, what issues of causation and liability were submitted to the jury that they did respond to?
They answered the first issue, which they failed to find that the contractor was negligent. Then they answered, I think, issue number four, that the condition of the road presented some sort of hazard to the motorists, the striping on the road. Those were the only liability issues answered. And it's our position that Mr. Nally's testimony and those exhibits went to those two liability issues, or more particularly went to the contractor's liability issue. In terms of the harmfulness of that video, we also think that the exhibits were harmful. Probably those engineering exhibits in and of themselves do not constitute reversible error, but in conjunction with the video, it's our position that they did. It's important to realize, by the time the jury sees this video, they spent several days listening to the testimony engineer on a bunch of dry subjects, construction contracts, angles of impact, light reflection. Mr. Nally had the only video exhibit. And the way they presented the video was to maximize that video's effectiveness. They did it by ending his direct examination with his narration of the video so it would have a lasting impact on the jury. We cite a number of legal and scientific authorities in our brief, some of which are in the Court of Appeals opinion, all of which have uniformly recognized that video has a much greater impact, makes a much more lasting impression on jurors than mere testimonial evidence. And this is particularly true, all these authorities recognize, when color video is used. And as the Court of Appeals recognized, we live in an age of television. People go to sleep with television. They wake up with television. They accept videotape. They believe it. And they're accustomed to it. It has a much greater impact. And that's why the videotape was not merely cumulative.
This is relatively simple videotape, isn't it? It appears to have been made on a sheet stretched along the floor next to a wall somewhere with two little locked vehicles going toward one another on a drawn highway.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. One of the reasons, although it's not in the record, I was at trial and I viewed the impact of the video on the jury.
Well, whether it had an impact or not, it is a relatively simple video.
Yes. The defendants dismissed the video and the other exhibits as basically being unimportant, time-saving devices, things of that nature. That wasn't their position in the trial court.
Is it, do you agree that the video was used for the one purpose of showing the angle of impact? That was the only purpose of showing the video and the only thing accomplished by the presentation of that particular point?
I would state it more broadly than that, Your Honor. I would say that the video was designed to demonstrate their entire theory of the accident in which it could only have happened if Mr. Lopez was asleep as opposed to being disoriented and therefore they were negligent in using the temporary striping.
I'm just having some difficulty understanding how the angle proves sleep.
The way the experts framed it, Your Honor, is that if you're asleep, there'll be a constant drift, is my understanding. And you can analyze that drift in two different ways. And our experts said the angle of impact represented somebody being awake, and their experts said it represented somebody being asleep. So it's just simply one of the things experts analyze and they look at and they reach conclusions on.
But the videotape was to prove that he was asleep.
That was one of the purposes, Your Honor.
Does the record include the transcription of the final argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
And were these exhibits used in the final argument?
It's my understanding that they were, Your Honor. One other point. Lawsuits don't get much closer than this one. In the first trial of this case, the jury was deadlocked before they ultimately found against liability. At the second trial, the jury went out on Monday and came back on a Friday before they awarded more than $8 million in damages but failed to find liability. This was a very, very close case, and the admission of these exhibits tipped the scales in their favor. This case also invokes some important policy concerns. If this court is serious about stopping discovery abuse, if it's serious about having lawyers pay attention to the lawyer's creed, reversing this case sends absolutely the wrong message to lawyers. This case doesn't involve an attorney inadvertently failing to designate a witness 30 days prior to trial. What it involves, in my opinion, is lawyers hiding evidence. Reversing this case is going to send a message to Texas lawyers they can hide evidence,
Counsel, I want to clarify once again.
Sure.
This evidence was offered in rebuttal to degree of impact evidence offered by the plaintiff's counsel. The degree of impact had not been raised before.
It's only rebuttal to the extent there's the last 30 seconds of the video. That's the only part that was prepared in rebuttal. The first three quarters of the video was prepared before they took our expert's deposition. The engineering exhibits raise the same issues at the first trial. So if there's surprise, if there's rebuttal in this case, it only goes to the last 30 seconds of that video. And that's what the Court of Appeals recognized. In terms of surprise as to the remainder of the video and the other exhibits, they didn't argue that in the Court of Appeals. They've raised it here, but they did not argue it in the Court of Appeals. And the reason they did is just simply not in the record, and it's not true.
Both of those exhibits you saw in the prior trial, four and five of them.
Though there were five exhibits we had never seen before, Your Honor.
The four other graphs were not introduced in the prior trial?
No, Your Honor. One was a revision of a prior exhibit. The other four we had never seen until the middle of the trial.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, the audience, and now the petitioners.
May it please the Court. First of all, I'd like to address a few issues raised by Mr. Patton. The issues in this case were not so intertwined that the jury considered the exhibits when deciding whether or not to find liability in this case. It is obvious that they didn't consider these exhibits because they went ahead and found that the striping was inadequate, but that it was the state's responsibility. And the overwhelming evidence in the transcript or the statement of facts before this court supports that jury finding. And it's laid out for you in my brief, and I don't have time to go into all that testimony today, but there was a lot of evidence, even from their own experts, that usually the state is the one that makes the requirements of the temporary striping, and the contractor is obliged to follow those specifications in the contract. They were also not intertwined because even during plaintiff's closing argument, in their brief to the Court of Appeals and in this brief to this court on pages 21 through 25, when they talk about the liability evidence, they talk about whether or not the striping was inadequate and whether or not the defendants had a duty to go beyond their contract with the state and provide additional or different temporary striping. They don't even mention the complaint of exhibits. But when they talk about the causation evidence and whether or not Salome Lopez fell asleep, they talk about the complaint of exhibits. Clearly, this shows you that, you know, there are two separate issues, and the jury was able to distinguish between the two.
Of course, the videotape was made in preparation for trial.
Yes, Your Honor.
All but the last 30 seconds, and that was made?
No, Your Honor.
During the trial and after the initial testimony?
No, Your Honor. The entire videotape was made 10 days before trial, and it was in response. And what happened in this case was the plaintiff had never before designated a causation expert. When they didn't designate a causation expert until the 30th day before trial. Within the rule, but forcing us to depose this witness 2 weeks before trial, and the only opportunity we had to rebut this testimony was within that 30-day period. So to rebut this testimony, our witness prepared a videotape, which compares his testimony given in a previous trial with their plaintiff's testimony that was given in the deposition. That was provided to the counsel 10 days before trial. Mr. Martinez, their expert, when he took the stand, did not even attempt to rebut this videotape. So the whole thing was offered in rebuttal. And the state did make this argument. In their motion in limine on whether or not this exhibit should be excluded, the state went before the court and said, hey, Your Honor, We didn't know about this guy. We just found out about him. He was deposed 2 weeks before trial, and so we're rebutting this with this videotape. And clearly, when you're faced with such a situation where they wait until just before the expiration of the deadline to designate a new witness who has a new theory, that not that he was awake, but that the accident occurred at a zero-degree impact, that you should have the opportunity to rebut that testimony because you have no other choice but to rebut it within that 30-day period, and surely that's got to be good cause. Additionally, counselor argues that we intentionally hid evidence. This is just not supported by the record. If you look at the record, you will see that of their two experts that were called at trial, one was designated on the 30th day before trial. We had to depose him 2 weeks before trial. The other witness had been designated but never had any previous opinions. Right before trial, we found out he did have opinions. So he had to be deposed between voir dire and opening remarks.
What do you mean he never he testified in the first trial with no opinions? Or
No yeah. opinions with regard to the adequacy of the temporary striping, and then he changed his mind at trial. And also, the witness that was designated the 30th day and had to be deposed 2 weeks before trial testified in his deposition that Lopez was in the wrong lane of traffic on purpose because he was looking for a ranch entrance. But then when he testified at trial, he said, oh, well, no, that's not right. He was in the other lane of traffic because he was disoriented from the fall. So he changed his testimony again at trial. We were not hiding any evidence. We were merely responding to their surprise testimony.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument in the second cause. The court will take another brief recess.
Guys, please rise.